Mo, come here, buddy. You're going to be in the movies.
And the person interviewing me wrote those words down, looked up from his piece of paper and said to me, "So do you think we're going to like that?"
Yeah, I do what I do today, Kathy, because of a fourth grade field trip.
No credit to me, just me fumbling along with what I knew at the time and the dog being very forgiving of my mistakes.
I love dogs. I know, that may be a shocker if you're new to the podcast. I'm a dog lover. There's a lot of reasons, and one of the really powerful reasons is that dogs live in the present. They don't worry about the future. They don't hold on to the past. They just live right now. I was talking with a friend yesterday who recently lost his mother, and she had been suffering with dementia for a number of years. So he really said goodbye to her a while ago. When I was talking with him about the process of grief and what he really loved most about his last months and years with his mom, he said there was something so magical about being with someone who is just in the present because that's all they have. They live in the now. So why is it that we hold on to the past? And more importantly, why is it that we hold on to things from the past to justify behavior looking forward? I don't know about you listeners, but I'm looking around the world these days seeing a lot of people justifying things that they're doing today because someone else did something or because of an historic thing, as opposed to, okay, those things happened. Here's where we are now. What does this get to look like looking forward? Because there can't really be a forward, there can't really be a looking ahead when you're so damn attached to the past. And that, my dear listeners, is where we're going today. Hey there, everybody. I'm Kathy Brooks, your host for Talk Unleashed, the weekly untethered view of what communication can really look like when we're prepared to be radically honest, radically authentic, and radically compassionate, conscious communication. It's what I coach, it's what I do, and each week on the podcast, that's what I get to share. Sometimes just my musings, and sometimes in conversation with remarkable human beings. So on today's episode, looking forward, and how I get to glance at my past, be informed by my history, but stop staring at it so damn much, to have my eyes on the future, while I have an understanding of where I've come from. So take a seat, lean back, and eyes ahead, because this is Talk Unleashed.
You can look at your past, just don't stare at it too long. Oh man, that phrase has been ringing through my head lately. I was driving into Philadelphia, and as I was driving along, the inside of the car was just bathed in this unbelievable combination of warm gold, honey, and marmalade. And I looked in the rearview mirror, and the sunset behind me was one of those sunsets that makes you just want to stop in your tracks and look. And well, it was behind me, and I thought hitting the brakes on the freeway, probably not a great idea. And by the time I'd find a place to pull over, I could see there were overpasses and trees and I wouldn't have the view anyway. So I just made a mental note of that glorious view and kept going. And I was reminded of a very wise woman in my life named Marcel. Now, Marcel used to sit in front of me every Saturday morning at the AA meeting that I attended when I first got sober. And it didn't matter what I shared. It didn't matter what the reading was. It didn't matter what experience I was going through at any given point in time. But after there would be a reading or after I would share an experience, Marcel would bend down to the enormous handbag that she had at her feet, rustle around in it for a minute, pull something out, and without even turning around and looking at me, she'd just hand something over her shoulder, a card, a piece of paper, a sticker. No matter what it was a poem. It was a passage from literature. It was a passage from AA literature. It was a quote. Didn't matter. And without fail, the message that was on that piece of paper related directly to whatever I'd said, whatever we'd read, whatever was going on in my mind at that moment. She was like this sobriety Mary Poppins whose bag always contained precisely the right thing at any given point in time. Don't know how she did it, don't know how it worked, I just know that it felt pretty damn magical. And I remember I was talking with her before a meeting one day, and I was relating something about a story from my past. And she chuckled and looked at me and she said, "Honey, you're looking in the wrong place." And I said, "What do you mean?" She said, "Well, you're looking at your past." So I replied, "Yeah, that's what we do. It's what we do here. It's what we do in life to develop and improve ourselves. We look at our past so that we can change it, so that we can improve on it." She said, "Yeah, we glance at it. We don't stare at it. You can look at your past. Just don't stare at it so damn long." And then she walked away. It occurs to me, it's like that moment I had driving the car, that I can glance in my rearview mirror, and I should, and I can glance in my side view mirror, and I should, but that's not where my attention should be. Because if it is, I'm going to have a problem in the place where it matters a lot, which is in front of me. I have one teacher who suggested there's a reason that the windshield is a lot larger than the rear view mirrors and the back window, because you need to be looking forward most of the time. A little later on my drive into Philly, I actually drove past a building that represents a very powerful and pretty dark part of my childhood. When I was 14 years old, I was diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And for those of you who don't know what that is an inflammatory bowel disease that affects the lining of the large intestine. And back when I was diagnosed as a kid, they really didn't know much about pediatric cases. In fact, the pediatric cases were next to none. They considered it to be an old person's disease. So the process that I went through to get diagnosed was pretty traumatic, because I had been experiencing bleeding for weeks. I was losing massive amounts of blood rectally, and I was terrified. My sister was getting married in a couple of months, and I didn't want to ruin the wedding, and I thought it would just go away if I didn't pay attention to it, because after all, I had never been sick before, and I was 14 years old, and I was terrified. I was terrified that it made me broken, that it was some sort of manifestation of this inner belief that somehow I was just broken. And so I didn't tell anybody. And then one morning, after running up three flights of stairs to my biology class, I got woozy and swooned, ended up in the nurse's office. They took my temperature, was running a low-grade fever, so they sent me home. My mom put me in bed. I was plied with soup and tea. And when I didn't really get better in the next couple of days, they took me to the doctor. Doctor couldn't figure it out, and I wasn't telling. My parents were sitting in the room, and I was equal parts terrified and humiliated. So the doctor figured that it might be a gastrointestinal problem, and the best GI doctor was downtown at Hahnemann Hospital. So the suburban doctor took a bunch of blood to run a bunch of tests and said, "Look, we're going to run these blood tests. We're going to rush the results. You head downtown, and by the time you get downtown, we'll make sure they have the results in hand for you." And by the time we got downtown to the hospital, they had a wheelchair at the door for me and my admitting paperwork already underway. See, the thing is, my hemoglobin was at 4. Now, for those of you who have any understanding of red blood cell count and all of that, you know just how bad that is. For those of you who don't, let me give you a little clue. Normal range for hemoglobin in a woman, in a girl, is 12 to 14. Mine was at 4. So they knew I was bleeding. They knew that it was substantial, and they just didn't know where it was coming from. Didn't take much time in the hospital for them to figure out where it was exiting my body, since can't really hide much in a pediatric wing of a hospital. But what ensued for me then was 3 weeks of terrifying tests of hearing the word whispered, cancer, and not knowing whether I was going to live or die, and on 2 occasions, very darn nearly bleeding out. And it was all because I was afraid not to look good. I was afraid to be myself. I was afraid to be authentic. I was afraid to tell my truth. I was afraid I'd be judged, mocked, teased. And it's funny because as an adult, it's something that I had to learn to get over. It's one of these things that we see in the world all around us, I certainly do, of people so deeply committed to looking good, so deeply committed to being right, that they ignore all the signs of the things that are wrong. So fast forward, we get the diagnosis of ulcerative colitis. We'd never heard of it. I was just glad it wasn't cancer. But the next years weren't really any easier. In and out of hospitals, sick a lot. I missed most of my freshman year of high school, most of my sophomore year. By junior, senior year, the disease was stabilized enough that I was in school. But I was never quite right, never quite right on the inside. As an adult, I realized that there were stories that I hadn't shared, things that I hadn't really allowed myself to process around these experiences. This realization that I'd almost died, and I'd almost died because of my need to look good. And so as I drove into Philadelphia that night, there it was, Hahnemann Hospital, the place I had been admitted on that day in the fall of my freshman year of high school. And that place where I stayed so many times over the following years. I don't think I had actually seen the building since that time, because when I left Philadelphia, I never really looked back. And as I sat on the street at that red light, waiting for the light to change, I realized that that sunset that had been behind my car was now framing the back of the hospital. The past always catches up. The question is, if I'm paying attention and aware of it, what does that catching up look like? If I'm blindly looking forward and not paying attention, not giving it mind, it's probably going to run into me pretty hard, pretty fast, giving me a nice rear-end thunk. Because if I'm not paying attention, just fixated forward, pretending that the past never happened, the likelihood that past is going to ram into my rear end going 100 miles an hour, it's pretty high. And so what does it get to look like to be balanced, to be aware of the past, but not attached to it, to glance at it, but not stare at it so damn much?
We did it again, another episode of Talk Unleashed. It's so great to have you here. And you know what would be even more great? If you could scoot over to Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, maybe even Spotify, and leave a review. Over on Apple, you actually have the chance to say a little bit about the episode. Spotify, just throw some stars on there, hopefully 5. It helps us get seen and helps ensure that this conversation and conversations like it keep getting heard by the people who need to hear them. So do us a favor, hop on over and leave a review. And in the category of saying awesome things about awesome people, huge thanks to my producer, John McClain, and the team at Monster Sound and Picture. They are just the best. And if you've got ideas or questions or feedback, I read all the email that comes in, so feel free to toss a message to talkunleashed@gmail.com. That's talkunleashed@gmail.com. Let me know what you like, what you don't like, who you want to hear from, all the groovy stuff. And most of all, thank you. Thank you for listening, for being part of the conversation, and for keeping the conversation going. See you next week.